This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Countries of the world recently gathered in Scotland for something called the COP Conference. What is it and why does it matter? What were American farmers doing there and how might it impact you? We talk with one of those in attendance and a past president of the American Soybean Association about U.S. agriculture's prospects in a rapidly changing global marketplace. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. You've heard me talk quite a bit about Pivot BioProven. You'll recall it's the microbial that stays strong all the way through harvest. It's a weather-resistant and sustainable way to achieve more predictable, more productive yields than ever before. For the past 2 years, we've conducted field trials on our farm, seeing a yield boost of 5 to 7 bushels per acre. While that yield boost is nice, even more exciting is the opportunity to replace some of our synthetic nitrogen, since Pivot BioProven can be a proven source of nitrogen throughout the growing season. And of course, that's a big factor in this time of higher input prices. That's why we've been using Pivot BioProven, and I hope you'll check it out as well. You can see more field trials and learn more by going to pivotbio.com. There was a recent conference held in Scotland called the COP Conference. If you've not heard of it or don't know its potential impact on U.S. agriculture, then our next two interviews will help you have an idea of the global conversations impacting local farming. Ernie Shea is president of Solutions from the Land, a farmer-led nonprofit working globally to advance land-based solutions to global challenges. I'll let him describe exactly what the group does and how the farmers he works with are speaking up on a world stage to influence the future of farming. Talk for just a moment about Solutions from the Land. How long has it been around, and what types of things then are you trying to accomplish?
Solutions from the Land has been around for probably 15 years. We formally incorporated in 2014, so now we're a not-for-profit, a nationally recognized not-for-profit. The best way to think about the work we do is to think about the problems that the world is facing. And the UN Sustainable Development Goals do a pretty good job of laying out the big, mega, global challenge that the world is facing. So how do we end hunger? How do we clean up water? How do we solve the climate crisis? How do we promote economic development? And the list goes on and on. There's 17 big Sustainable Development Goals. And what we're doing is demonstrating how successful agriculture can be a solution pathway to at least 10 of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. So the conversation is about solutions from agriculture, not what we historically have been drawn into, which is conversations about problems from agriculture.
Let's talk about this big picture, but I want to go specifically to something you just came from, which was the COP conference. Maybe explain for folks what that exactly is and what your role was there, bringing farmers to that. And then let's expand back out and talk about this bigger picture. But certainly that conference was in the news and way beyond just agriculture.
Well, the world is desperately seeking to come up with a practical way to address the climate challenges that are real. Our farmers work the land every day. They know climate change is happening. We don't have to debate that. The question is, how will the private and public sector respond? What types of programs and policies and markets and investments can be put in place to address the climate crisis? So we have been involved with the Climate Convention for well over a decade, attending. This was our 7th climate conference, and the annual conventions are called the Conference of the Parties. So this was COP26. And we went to COP26 with a delegation of 7 farmers, and they told the story of their experiences managing agricultural operations to deliver on all of these SDG goals that we can help with. So it was a place to show up and demonstrate that using innovation, using technology, using bread and butter conservation programs, we can turn the agricultural landscapes of this world into a huge carbon sink, into a huge solution platform. And we came away from the COP feeling like we finally broke through. After over a decade of talking about agriculture, there was an awakening to the fact that agriculture maybe has something to offer. And that's a fundamental departure from where we've been. When we went to COP 15, I think it was, back in Copenhagen, that was the first time agriculture was even in the room. There was a place to have a conversation about agriculture. And it started in a fairly negative framing that agriculture emits methane. Agriculture has nitrous oxide emissions. Agriculture is a heavy energy user and is contributing significantly to greenhouse gas emission reductions. And we said, sure, we're part of the problem, but so too is every person in this room because you breathe, you eat, you drive a car. Why don't we think more broadly about solutions from agriculture? And that started the journey we've been on for these last 10 plus years. And at COP26, because the world is struggling mightily with how are they going to achieve the greenhouse gas reduction targets, how are they going to keep global warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius, they are realizing they can't get there with the current pathways that they're operating under. So now there's receptivity to an agricultural pathway. We were there talking about how, with the right enabling policies, the right markets, the right investments, that farmers and ranchers and forest landowners across the world can be unleashed to deliver what the world is looking for. Our central message is that we need to be thinking about not just the corn, the beans, the rice, the cotton, the pork, the beef that we produce, the timber. We need to be thinking about those commodities, obviously, but also the ecosystem services that well-managed farms and ranches can deliver. So the carbon we can sequester, the water we can filter and store, the biodiversity and wildlife that we can enhance. So we came back very encouraged by what the U.S. government launched with the United Arab Emirates, where they announced the creation of the AIM for Climate Initiative, the Agriculture Innovation Mission for Climate Action. They secured, I believe it was around $4 billion in initial investment to support that pathway. And that is exactly consistent with what we've been talking about as we've been working the COPs for the last decade or so. We think the next 2 years in particular are going to provide a ramp up where other aligned thinkers, member countries, businesses, farmer organizations, conservation groups can rally. And our mission now is to help build and support an alliance to carry this pragmatic approach into the COP and into other conventions where the future of agriculture is being written. So pretty excited. And next year, the COP is going to be held in Egypt, which we think will provide an opportunity for a elevation of agriculture in the convention. And the following year, it will be in the United Arab Emirates, where we hope and expect that the whole AIM initiative, 2 years in, will really have an opportunity to be on the main stage at the Global Climate Convention, and agriculture can really shine and tell our story.
Begin to connect the dots then back to the local producers here in the United States. We hear about these conferences and others and these things going on. How does that impact the local farmer, and how do they have play a role in this as well? Because I'm certain they don't want to be told what to do, but yet they certainly have a piece in the solution, and they would like to drive the discussion much as what you're, it sounds like, trying to do.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And what farmers want are options and choices and incentives. They don't want to be mandated. And while we're in the COP talking about enabling programs and policies and markets that will give producers a choice to pick the systems, the practices that best fit with their farming operation, their local climate, their precipitation challenges, whatever is unique about a a farming system around the country, they need flexibility. They need an all tools in the toolbox approach. So we're fighting hard in the Climate Convention and other UN platforms to make sure that choice is preserved. So we're not the only voice, though, in the future of agriculture. So the European Union has their own set of policies and programs. And the Farm to Fork initiative, we think, is very prescriptive and not well thought out. And too narrowly focuses on a climate outcome, missing the other sustainable development goals. So their approach is to simply mandate. We're going to mandate the reduction in fertilizer and pesticide inputs that will then achieve the outcomes we want. We approach it the other way. What outcomes do you want? Give farmers a choice, an option, and they'll pick and choose the systems that will enable them to be successful, economically viable, and deliver what you want. So they're polar opposite approaches, and that's where the AIM for Climate initiative comes in, because it really is spotlighting the all tools in the toolbox approach and the need to provide a big toolbox. We're also facing a chorus of transformational change messaging coming from kind of a very diverse and growing coalition of social justice, environmental justice, plant-based diet, animal welfare, interest groups, some environmental activists that have banded together and are arguing that the agricultural innovation and technology platform that we've been benefiting from is fundamentally broken. And the answer to the climate crisis is to go back in time and abandon innovation and technology and to adopt simply agroecological systems and practices. That voice is gaining momentum, and you see it manifested in the pushback against animal agriculture. So the plant-based diet voices, joined now by health advocates, are making a very strong pitch to disincentivize the production and consumption of animal protein. We think that's ludicrous, because animals are part of an agricultural landscape, and they're part of a integrated farming system that can deliver the SDG outcomes we want. And it comes back to the work we're doing to advance core guiding principles. So farmers need to be at the center of all discussions and decisions. We need to be embracing innovation and technology. We need to be respecting science. We need to manage for integrated outcomes, not for single silo approaches. And that's what we do.
How do you see this playing out then? Is it more governments mandating? Is it consumers driving this discussion? Is it multinational food companies saying this is what we want? How much of a voice do farmers have in it? What is the balance that we see in 5 or 10 years driving this in the end?
Well, it's all of the above. So there are some that think that a government-centric driving platform to affect change is the way to go. Others think that markets alone will do it. We're of the opinion that we need and will have both. We need to have smart public policy, well-designed markets, highly crafted financial investment resources that help farmers be successful. It goes back to the all tools in the toolbox approach, and that's what we work to advance.
You can learn more about what Ernie and other farmers are doing by going to solutionsfromtheland.org. In the second half of our show, we continue the conversation about local farming practices on the global agriculture stage. Bart Ruth raises corn and soybeans in eastern Nebraska and served as president of the American Soybean Association about 20 years ago. Besides farming, he is a co-chairman of 25 by 25. That's where we began.
Well, 25 by 25 grew out of a conversation back in 2004 amongst a group of farmer leaders from various commodity organizations, conservation districts, and just got to thinking about how American agriculture could be a major force in producing energy across our country. So whether that was biofuels, wind, solar, biomass, there was a role for America's heartland to, whether it's crops or woodlands or forests, could play a role in America's energy future. So they established a goal of reaching 25% of electrical generation by 2025. and of 25%, and you know, it's been a bit of a tough glide path, but we've continually made some headway. And as we've seen ebbs and flows in subsidies for different forms of power, we see growth, and then it slows, and then it takes off again. But I think it's safe to say that biofuels have been a success, and we're really, I think, poised for a renaissance in biofuels as well.
Well, certainly this is a part of a bigger discussion of, you know, sustainability and global trends and so forth. You mentioned there's been ebbs and flows. Why is that? Is it simply because we are so tied to having some cash incentives to make this happen? Is it the global economic climate? What is it that makes these things happen? Because it looks like we're going to have to do more of it in the future.
Well, I think it's a combination of, you know, sometimes there's been tax incentives for wind or solar. Other times there haven't been. We've seen the ethanol market vary depending on the politics at play. We've seen efforts over the years to advance. We talked about carbon several years ago, and that kind of fell off the table again, depending on the administration, depending on the politics at play. So we really haven't had a consistent policy base to build from, other than the RFS, which kept ethanol on life support for a while. And I think now we're starting to see ethanol markets become incredibly strong in recent months. And I think we're finally starting to get some acceptance that we need to clean up the fuel that we're using. You know, there's been a big push for electrical vehicles, but still there's going to be a major role for gasoline-powered vehicles for the foreseeable future, certainly well beyond our lifetime. So the things we can do to clean up the emissions from those vehicles make sense, and ethanol is certainly a perfect partner for that.
You mentioned the electric vehicles. Is that something that farmers, crop producers should fear in a sense, or is it something that we should welcome because it's driving a much bigger conversation in which farmers play a very important role?
Oh, I don't know that we need to be fearful of it. I mean, it's going to happen, but it's going to be a slow acceptance. And there's certainly challenges with providing enough energy to fuel. If you're going to be charging mass quantities of vehicles traveling up and down the states, the interstates across our country, and then eventually throwing in electric-powered trucks, the challenges that are there with just the weight of batteries and those kinds of logistical challenges, it's not going to happen overnight. And there's certain applications where electric vehicles probably never do fit. High horsepower, heavy industrial things, it's just not a good fit. And I think people are starting to think a little harder about how much energy it takes to fuel up these vehicles. And it's not something that's relatively simple. And then we look, the other market for biofuels, with the aviation industry under heavy pressure to reduce emissions, where they're looking at renewable fuels, renewable jet fuels. Shipping industry has the same challenges that they need to reduce emissions from ships transporting goods across the seas. So I think the future is pretty bright for biofuels, and despite developments we see in electrical.
So as we look at some of these other segments of the industry, what holds the most opportunity, do you think, for agriculture? Because biofuels have done well in comparison to some of the other things we've talked about. So where are we heading in the next 5 or 10 years and beyond?
We just had a delegation return from the COP26 in Scotland, and agriculture is finally gaining some recognition as part of the solution to climate challenges. And so I think there's opportunities there. Farmers are doing a lot of practices that make sense for the environment already, and the farmers are realizing that they not only are sustainable for the environment, they're sustainable for the economics for their operation. So I think all these things coupled together provide a bright future for agriculture, not only in the energy generation side, but for environmental services. The challenge is just developing the policies to find ways to compensate producers for those environmental services that they're rendering.
How do you see that then playing out? Will it be more government entities making some of those types of things? Will it be driven by large global food companies helping make those payments, consumers? How much of a say do farmers have in this in the end?
Well, hopefully farmers are at the table having that conversation. And one of the challenges we've had is that just due to the polarizing conversation around climate change over the years is that, you know, we've had a hard time coming to grips whether climate change is real or not. And I think it's safe to say whether you think it's man-made or not, we are seeing more intense events. And we've seen it on our farms. We've seen heavy rains, we've seen heat, we've seen wind. So we know it's happening. So we obviously are doing things that can help mitigate that. So we need to find the mechanism to help compensate us for doing that. The challenge is finding the right vehicle. You know, so far what's been driven by industry probably isn't providing the kind of incentives that producers really need to sign those kinds of contracts. So we'll see how it shakes out. You know, we've always been believers in the United States in incentive-based policy rather than a regulatory approach. We're kind of fighting headwinds in Europe where it's been the other way around, where they've taken more of a regulatory approach toward agriculture. So those things all come to head when you meet in a global conversation like COP. And I think we're making headway. When we actually have farmers at the table explaining how the real world works, I think we're finally finding some thought leaders around the globe that are paying attention to farmers.
For farmers out there, do you see them having to make large changes in how they farm? Is it stuff that they perhaps are already very familiar with and make those changes? What types of things should they be thinking about going forward?
No, I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel, because a lot of these things farmers are already doing because they make economic sense. We're adopting precision technology, whether it's placement of fertilizers, pesticides, seed placement to maximize production on individual acres and yet minimize expense on acres that aren't as productive. So we're doing those things. We're implementing no-till. We're implementing strip-till. We're using cover crops. All these things are part of that basket of services that we're rendering, and they're doing them because it makes sense economically. And maybe they've talked to a neighbor or noticed the guy across the field that's got the cover crop and how nice that field's plant next spring when he goes out there and plants into existing cover crop. So anecdotal evidence certainly sways a lot of opinion, and I think we're seeing that. So no, I don't think it's going to take a reinvention of the way we farm, because I mean, climate smart agriculture is certainly part of the lexicon today, and the farmers are utilizing it. And you know, if we're going to feed a growing population around the world, we need sustainable intensification of agriculture, not rolling back the clock to producing back in the romanticized agrarian fashion that a lot of consumers think is what agriculture should look like.
Why don't we wind up with this? How would you help farmers think about what they need to be thinking about moving forward? Because I think it's natural. Some of us get a little worried when we hear about these changes and summits and so forth going on. But yet agriculture has a very important role to play, and farmers can help drive that. So how should we be a part of that moving forward?
Well, I think we need to open up to a global view a little more. You know, I've got a lot of friends that farm across the world, Australia and other places, and I'm always amazed at the global view they have that I think sometimes is lacking. We've been the breadbasket of the world for a long time, and I think we really need to understand how the global marketplace works and how global policy impacts us as individual producers in rural America. You know, I think a lot of times agriculture has been maybe unfairly, but we tend to look to the end of the road and see our mailbox. And I know producers around the world are looking out and seeing across the sea and seeing how we farm. And I think just gaining a sense of how competitive this global environment is, how intertwined it is. And well, we've had perfect examples with the pandemic when people can't find parts. Computer chips are in short supply. Everything is so interlinked today that something that happens in China impacts us almost immediately. So just gaining a global understanding and not being afraid of technology, not being afraid to adapting. And you know, farmers have always been masters of innovation. We try new things. And you know, where would the world be without a farmer inventing a center pivot? So those kinds of things, farmers can usually find a way to make things work, and we're adopting technology, and don't be afraid of change.
Bart, I appreciate the time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
While some of what Ernie and Bart discussed may seem far removed from our local activities on the land, it is an important discussion with looming impacts for those of us in agriculture. Those impacts certainly don't have to be negative, and the groups they represent are working to add the U.S. farmer's voice to shared solutions that can be beneficial to all. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Remember, you can catch past shows at farmingthecountryside.com, and you can get more info by following Farming the Countryside on Facebook. You can also follow our daily features, American Countryside, on many local radio stations, and we are also at americancountryside.com and American Countryside on Facebook as well. And don't forget that we're posting ideas for revitalizing rural and agricultural America at totaltownmakeover.com. If you go under the Resources tab there, you'll find many of our TV, radio, and podcast features that will give you ideas for where you live. I appreciate you listening. I'm Andrew McCray. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.